Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Produce Buzzers podcast. We're so happy that you've joined us today, and I think you will be too after the show is over. You will have learned a lot about fresh fruits and vegetables, how to prepare them, what their nutritional value is, all about their history and origin. We hope you'll find it interesting, and we hope it inspires you to eat more fresh fruits and vegetables, not only to improve your health, but to enjoy their deliciousness while you do so. Hello again, everyone. Thanks for joining us today on the Produce Buzzers podcast. I'm your host, Edwin Stepp, the executive editor for producebuzz.com, and we're joined, as usual, by Teresa Nolan, the president and founder of producebuzz.com, along with Rick Stepp and Cynthia Benedetto, both contributors to producebuzz.com. So New Year's Day is coming soon. It's hard to believe another year is almost over. What is your holiday tradition for New Year's Day? Do you have a special meal you eat? In the South, the tradition has always been to have collard greens and black-eyed peas as the main vegetables. So today, Rick is going to tell us all about collard greens.
So collard refers to certain loose-leafed cultivars of brassica, the same species as many common vegetables, including cabbage and broccoli. Due to a high genetic similarity with cabbage, the name collard comes from the word colewort. It's a medieval term for non-heading brassica crops, but they genetically are related to cabbage and broccoli. The plants are grown as a food crop for their large, dark green, edible leaves. The plant is a biennial, where winter frost occurs. Some varieties may be perennial in warmer regions. It has an upright stalk, often growing over 2 feet tall, and sometimes up to 6 feet tall. They are available year-round, but are tastier and more nutritious in the cold months after the first frost.
Can they grow year-round? I guess they're grown mostly in warmer climates, correct? Is that why they're available year-round? I mean, you couldn't grow them in Minnesota.
In fact, my son Phil has 30 acres with his home, and he grows them on his land for the deer to eat.
And they grow in the middle of winter?
No, they don't grow in the middle of winter, but you can grow them during the season here.
Right.
Yeah, it's too cold in the wintertime.
That's what I meant, because you said I'm getting to the year-round aspect.
Yeah, in Florida, you can grow collards year-round. California places, you can, yeah. Even in South Georgia, you can grow them year-round because they're resistant to frost.
Okay.
So Phil told me these are collards that I'm growing for the deer, and I said, you're kidding. I'm buying collards, and you have them growing out here? For best texture, the leaves are picked before they reach their maximum size, at which stage they are thicker and are cooked differently from the new leaves. Age does not affect flavor. So if you have collards that are growing for several months and they're bigger, the flavor still must be the same.
And you said they can go as high as 6 feet.
Yeah.
That's good to know. A lot of vegetables, as they get bigger, get tougher and more difficult to eat, not as tender.
For just 3.5 ounces of collards, and that would be after cooking them, not before cooking them. Very high in certain vitamins. That same 3.5 ounce portion of collards has 48% of your daily allowance of vitamin A, 22% of vitamin C, 6% of vitamin E, and a whopping 388% of vitamin K, which is incredible when you think about it, that you get almost 400, if you ate 4 ounces, you're getting 400% of your daily allowance of vitamin K, which is why a lot of people who are on blood thinners have to watch the amount of leafy greens that they eat, because if they're on blood thinners, they may have to increase the amount of blood thinner to counteract the clotting power of the vitamin K. Raw collard greens are 90% water, and they're 6% carbohydrates and 3% protein. So that's a pretty good ratio for a vegetable to have that much protein. Collard greens have been eaten for at least 2,000 years, with evidence showing that the ancient Greeks cultivated several types of collard. In Montenegro, collard greens, locally known as rustica or rustan, were traditionally one of the staple vegetables. It is particularly popular in the winter, stewed with smoked mutton or cured pork, root vegetables, and potatoes. Collards in Turkey are known as dark cabbage. It is a staple in the Black Sea area. So it's kind of interesting the places that collards are popular. some places, like here in Minnesota where I live, if you ask someone if they've ever had collards, they probably have never eaten them.
Only the deer.
Yeah. That's only because
they say, that's just deer food. What are you giving me, collards?
And that's only because my son read online the best crops to plant to attract deer. You know, it's not because, oh, I know, I'll grow collard greens this year. No.
He's probably the only person growing collard greens for 500 miles in a
Collard greens are a staple vegetable in southern U.S. cuisine, as we know, and they're often prepared with other similar green leafy vegetables such as spinach, kale, turnip greens, and mustard greens in the dish called mixed greens. Typically used in combination with collard greens are smoked and salted meats such as ham hocks, fatback, or other fatty meat. Traditionally, collards are eaten on New Year's Day along with black-eyed peas or field peas and cornbread. This is said to ensure wealth in the coming year. Cornbread is used to soak up the quote-unquote pot liquor, which is the juices left after you cook the collards. Pot liquor is a nutrient-rich collard broth. Collard greens may also be thinly sliced and fermented to make a collard sauerkraut, which that would be interesting. Yeah. I've thought about making sauerkraut, but to me, it's just too much trouble. But, you know, going back to the pot liquor that's left when you cook greens, Cynthia will appreciate this. I don't know if Cynthia knows this, but you can cook collard greens in the microwave.
No, stop it now. Get out of town.
Who'd have thunk?
When I cook them in the microwave, I take my Tupperware microwave steamer. Yes. Just a little bit of water in the bottom.
Water. Let's all say it with him. But just a little. Come on, everybody. Just a little water. Put the greens in the basket.
Put it in the microwave for four minutes.
Because there's a lot of water in the collards. You know, they're 90% water. So once you get it going, it produces its own water. So you only just need a little bit of water just to get it going. And when I'm done cooking them, I just take that quote unquote pot liquor, which is basically just the juices from steaming the collards, and I pour them in a coffee cup and I just drink it straight down. So I'm not wasting anything. So I'm getting all those nutrients that are cooked out of it.
You got to get every piece of that radiation in your body.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm surprised you didn't say you mix it with bourbon.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's his aronia berry concentrate. Yeah.
You could, you got your collard bourbon smoothie. I mean, all you do is you just put the fresh collards in the blender and put about, I'd say maybe a half a pound of collards in the blender with about a quart of brandy. And then blend it.
Are the collards cooked first?
No, use them raw because the brandy will neutralize the bitter taste of the collards.
Well, I think
you'll
about
be anesthetized and you won't feel anything.
You know, that pot liquor might actually make a decent martini. If you think about a dirty martini, which is
now that I like,
with the olive oil, the olive juice from a jar of olives, and the olives it's very savory. It's not sweet, but that might be pretty good actually.
And I've got to say, I don't think I've ever heard of that. That's called a dirty martini.
Yeah, it's when most martinis, they just put the olives in.
Right.
But to make it dirty, you pour the juice from the olive.
Yeah, real salty.
Into the vodka.
Well, that's got a lot of oil and stuff in it too, hasn't it? Not just
the juice. I mean, it's not pure oil. There's got to be oil from the olives, but it's mostly water and salt, I think.
Okay.
Whatever they pack olives in, which is water and salt, I think.
Yeah.
I think we should inject a disclaimer. Do not try this at home.
Yeah. No, it's okay to try this at home, but do not drive.
You have to put that other disclaimer in. The The events in this podcast are not real. They're not based on anybody's name or real life. And the names have been changed to protect them.
Yeah. Totally fictitious. Any similarity to truth? Yeah,
people alive or dead, or fruits or vegetables alive or dead. It's purely by coincidence.
And no animals were harmed when we made the brain. So in the United States, collard greens symbolize African-American culture and identity. For example, jazz composer and pianist Thelonious Monk sported a collard leaf in his lapel to represent his African-American heritage. In President Barack Obama's first state dinner, collard greens were included on the menu. Novelist and poet Alice Walker used collards to reference the intersection of African-American heritage and Black women. There have been many collard festivals that celebrate African-American identity, including those in Port Wentworth, Georgia, since 1997, East Palo Alto, California, since 1998, Columbus, Ohio, since 2010, and Atlanta, Georgia, since 2010. I was surprised that it was that late in history that they actually celebrated collards. Frankly, I thought it would say since 1913 or something.
The festival, though. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting that only in recent history have people looked at it as a cultural thing, whereas we grew up, it was a cultural thing where we grew up. I just thought that was interesting. It's been that recent that it became vogue. The tradition of black-eyed peas in the Southern New Year celebration goes back to the Civil War, when the North invaded the South and left everything desolate. They burned homesteads, and the only thing a lot of people had left to eat after the South was defeated was field peas that were still growing in the fields, black-eyed peas and other types of field peas. They were able to survive on those. It became a New Year's tradition that if you eat those, it gives you good luck in the coming year. And it comes from that Civil War era. I'm not sure about the collards. The collards were probably left growing as well. So that's something else they were probably able to survive on.
They are a hardy plant, so maybe. I don't think they would survive fire. But
I don't think you could burn them if they're growing. The Union Army probably didn't have a taste for collards. So they probably, you know, if you had chickens or pigs or cattle, they took that to feed the troops.
Yeah.
And maybe burned your house down. All you were left with was a field of collards and black-eyed peas, you know, because they didn't have a taste for those.
That's deer food. We don't eat them.
There you go.
So what about the black-eyed peas with the dime?
Yeah, when we were kids, our mother would make black-eyed peas for New Year's. And Teresa's right. She would make pork chops, black-eyed peas, and sauerkraut, correct?
Right.
Which is a little bit of her German influence, I think, because her mother was 100% German. Going back, her mother was from Iowa. And so naturally her mother would have had influence on what she cooked. Even the pork chops were probably an Iowa thing, because I think most Southern meals for New Year's, they don't eat pork chops, do they? They eat, like Colette mentioned, a pork roast.
But does it matter what cut of pork it is?
No.
No, it wouldn't. In fact, it could be chicken. If you wanted to say, my New Year's tradition is I eat a chicken for New Year's. Because chickens were massacred during the Civil War. So I do it in tribute to all the chickens who lost their lives.
And we're not talking about the people who were running on 2 feet.
Yeah. it's, I think I made pork. The first time I served that meal for my family when my daughters-in-law were all here was I did pork chops, because that's what my mom used to do.
Yeah.
So that's all. That's pretty much all I have today, unless there's any more discussion on collards that we want to do.
We will have some more discussion on collards. In fact, we've got a very special segment coming up right now where we're going to tell you how to cook them with a very special guest. Thanks very much, Rick. Very helpful, useful information. And hopefully it'll inspire our listeners to try collard greens. For those of you not from the South, you probably have not tried them. But they are delicious if made right. And they are nutritious, very nutritious. So maybe you'll try it on New Year's Day, as we do here in the South, with some black-eyed peas. Put that dime in those black-eyed peas and see who gets it for the good luck for the coming year. But be very careful as you eat it. Look for that dime. Don't swallow the dime. Anyway, more about this New Year's tradition and more about collard greens. Produce Buzzers podcast fans, we have a very, very special guest with us today. And she's part of the family. You know, we're one big family here. She's related to us steps, Teresa and Rick and myself. She's our first cousin, one of our favorite cousins. We have today with us Colette Worley. Her mother was our dad's sister. Her mother and her father and Colette all ran a restaurant here in Hendersonville that was very successful for many years with the most delicious food. Since we have been talking about collard greens today, we wanted to bring her on to share her delicious collard greens recipe. So, Colette, welcome. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing so well, and I really appreciate the chance to do this with you guys. I've listened to your podcast before, and I just think they're great.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you so much. You're so sweet. But we're eager to hear your delicious recipe, so take it away, Colette.
Rick had given me a compliment about my collard greens, and really almost everything that I make goes back to my mother and our grandmother and Teresa's mom, your mom. They were all such wonderful cooks. It's just real simple. Good basic ingredients are the key, I think.
Right.
Yeah, well, I had good ingredients, and mine was a colossal failure, so... Spilled bean.
Yeah, that's how we got you in on this, because Cynthia tried to make them and she said they were terrible. So Rick said, well, let's call Colette and get her recipe, because man, the ones she made were good.
I'll never forget that. I can't remember though, was it ham that you use or
what? Some fatback, actually. Yeah. And it only takes a couple of slices, you know, thinly sliced. Southern cooking is delicious, but it's not very healthy, you know. And you put maybe a tablespoon of oil. And what I like about doing the collard greens in a wok is that you don't have to put them in a giant pot and let them cook to death in too much water. Collards were always cooked on a stove in a big pot with lots and lots of water, and they were cooked down so they would be tender. So I took kind of my mother's way of doing that and her recipe and put them in a wok so they would cook faster and with a lot less liquid. So I think the nutrients were kept a little bit better and they stayed a nice green color, you know, good to eat, instead of being just kind of cooked to death into a gray color on the stove.
Which is what also makes them bitter if they're overcooked, right?
Yes.
But it sounds like with you cooking it in the wok, Colette, that you're just not boiling all the nutrients away.
Yes.
That really sounds like a healthier version of it. Fat back and all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the flavor. I think it really does help the flavor, because the longer it sits in that water on the stove, it just changes. I think it just changes somehow the whole flavor of it as well. If you use a wok, I think the steam really helps them get done. And you want to do about half of them at a time.
Do you have the cover on the wok or just open?
Covered. Mm-hmm. Finding good fresh collards is what's important. Teresa, you know, you're always my go-to person on what does it need to look like and what, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you talk about what it needs to look like, because I don't think I've ever made collard greens, if you can believe it. So I think you could tell us what you look for.
No self-respecting Southern lady would ever admit that, Teresa.
Well, I hear that, Cynthia. Sorry.
Well, you got to remember she's a quarter German.
Well, when you find them, and it really is best after the first frost, whatever that frost does to bring the sugar, I guess, out in them, however small that is, but it is still better to wait until after the first frost. So having it on New Year's Day, of course, you've already passed through that if you're in the South. You want to look for that good, fresh green color. If they're droopy and wilted, you want to pass them by. And the main thing is you've got to get those spines off. So when you get them, get that spine out of there.
The stem in the center.
Yes. So you're going to get that out of there. And you can even put a little bit of vinegar when you wash them. You're going to wash them at least 3 times to be sure that grit comes out of there. And then the last washing, when there's no more grit or dirt, and you're going to chop them into bite-sized pieces, or you can tear them. I think it's easier to chop them. The problem with the collards that you can get in the store that are already prepared, I don't think I've ever seen any that anybody took any care to get the stems or the spines out of there. So that's why often they're bitter that way.
Well, you're talking about the bagged collard greens?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Did you use that, or did you just go ahead and start with the ones?
No, I used, like, they did have that one. Yeah, it had the full leaf, yes. And they were nice, no dehydration. They were a pretty piece of produce.
Yes.
Do you just take out that center spine, Colette, or do you take out the little spines that go off the center?
No, just the main one.
Okay.
So I just cut a couple of slices of the fat back, the oil, and let that brown a little bit, you know, and then you can either take it out or leave it in.
What is fat back exactly?
Fat back is a solid slab of fat from the back of the pig.
Ah,
oh, so, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's your fat back that's ready and a little bit of oil. Now, if you do not want any meat in there, then a lot of people like chicken stock to use, and you're going to up that little bit of oil instead of a tablespoon to maybe 2 tablespoons. If you're doing the fat back method and take it out, if you prefer, then you're going to add about 1/2 cup of water or the chicken stock, maybe 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and about 5 grinds or 1/4 teaspoon of black pepper. And my mother always added 2 tablespoons of sugar. I do that too. It's not really to sweeten them, but it helps take that bitterness. I think most greens have a little bit of a bitter flavor. We never pass up a chance to add sugar.
That probably has something to do with the acid, doesn't it? There's got to be some, like, it's the bitterness. I wonder if the sugar, like when you add sugar to things that have tomato in it, it helps to affect the acid.
Yeah. But you want it to be able to bubble and cook, but you don't want a hard boil either on the stove or in the wok.
So just a nice simmer.
Yes, yes. And it should take that first group of them about 12-15 minutes. Then you check the wok and see if it needs some more water. I like to have water that's already got about the same proportion of the salt and pepper in there and a little sugar, so that if I open that lid and it's, oh dear, you know, I've got to put some more in here. I don't have to try to guess at how much I can pour that water that's already prepared and put that second in, and then cook those up. Let that absorb the water in there. Just be sure it doesn't run dry.
So you do it in batches?
Mm-hmm. Now, if you've got them on the stove and you're going to let them cook for a long time, you wouldn't have to. But in the wok, you know, you think you're going to have this great serving, enough to feed an army. But in reality, once they cook down, it's amazing how much less that compresses after they're cooking.
So kind of like spinach?
Yes.
So speaking of the volume, how I'm not sure how we measure collard greens for the recipe. Do you cut them up and then measure them in a cup? And if so, how for your recipe, how many collard greens are you using?
Normally when you buy them in the store, a bunch. And I would think that would weigh about 2 pounds, 2 to 3 pounds.
Oh man, so, mine was anorexic then. Mine was sure not 2 pounds.
Do you buy more than one bunch? Do you buy more than one bunch, or do you just buy one bunch?
Just one. I mean, and it looks huge when you get them, at least down here in the South, it looks like you could feed seriously, you know, 12 people. But the way they compress once they're cooked, they'll two batches will fit into the, a wok, a good size. Use electric, you know, once that first group's ready and they're already compressed, and you just kind of give them a good stir and then add the extra liquid if you need it. Mother always had hard boiled eggs on the side because they're delicious with the greens and vinegar. And she also would put out a little cruet of pickle juice, going, I guess, back to that extra sugar, you know.
That's interesting.
That's really all
you said, hard boiled eggs.
Yes, they're so good, sliced with them.
Okay. You just eat them as a separate side, or do you actually put them on the greens?
Well, we did. We put them on top almost like a little garnish, right. You know, just some slices. But
delicious. And the pickle juice sounds good to me, too.
Yeah.
And really, that's all there is to it. It's a very simple recipe.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks very much.
Okay. Colette, would you say that this recipe comes directly from our grandmother step? Or do you think it's something that your mom figured out on her own?
I think everything the girls did, the daughters and sons too, probably was something that Mama Step started.
You know, Colette, talking about all these recipes that came from Mama Step, we called her.
Yes.
I was on a flying from Chicago out west, and there was a man sitting next to me, and we struck up a conversation, and he asked me, oh, he said, I hear your Southern accent. Where are you from? I said, well, right now I'm living in Wisconsin, but I'm originally from North Carolina. And he said, oh, that used to be part of my sales territory. Do you know a town? Hendersonville. I said, oh, that's where I'm from. He said, oh my goodness. He said, every day at noon, no matter where I was in Hendersonville, I would head to Dana to eat lunch at the restaurant there at J.H. Stephenson's. And I said, that was my grandfather's store, and it was my grandmother's restaurant. She ran that restaurant. And I thought, here I am flying from Chicago to California and meeting someone who ate Mama Step's cooking when she ran the restaurant there in Dana. They confirmed how good her food tasted. She was a great cook. And your mother, too, was a great cook. Of course, she and your dad had that restaurant in Hendersonville, the Tasty Treat. And boy, was the food good there. It was wonderful.
Thank
you. It was excellent. I remember there was a time, sometime when I was a teenager, probably, I was working with my dad. Of course, I always worked with him, but there were several summers in a row where we ate at the Tasty Treat, Colette's parents' restaurant, every day for lunch. And it was fantastic. The food, you know, they served everything. You know, they had cheeseburgers and French fries and hot dogs, I think. But as a kid, you'd think that's really what I love. But the lunches were so good and healthy there. You'd go in, they'd have a chalkboard. On the chalkboard, you'd have selection of meats. You choose a meat, and then they'd have on the other side of the chalkboard all the vegetables available that day, and you could get either two vegetables or three vegetables, and you know, select what you want. And boy, that was that good.
Oh, thank you. Your memory is good about all of that. And it was a great way to grow up and have the all the different foods that, you know, mom would prepare, or if she had someone helping her, they followed her direction on that. But things like beef stew, Cynthia, and of course, country style steak there again with your arteries.
Oh, man.
About it.
Right. Well, one of the best things that ever happened to me was, you know, Colette and I grew up together. We were like sisters, even though we were just first cousins, we were like sisters. And we fulfilled our childhood dream by getting to room together for a whole year in Charlotte, North Carolina. And she would bring back from her visits back home on the weekends, seal-a-meal bags of food that her mother had packed up from the restaurant. We would have these wonderful meals from her mother that her mother sent to us. Plus, I learned how to cook a lot of things that, you know, we didn't cook at home just from being around Colette. So it was a really good education for me too. So,
yeah. And I remember Colette worked in the restaurant. I don't you know, you were, it seems like most of the times I was there, you were there by bad memory. But you must have worked there a lot, right?
Oh my, you know, and it's funny. At that time, during that time, when the Tasty Treat first opened, it was my father's friend. His name was Johnny. And he had this great enterprise and he was going to have the restaurant. Well, the only time Johnny actually showed up was to help take in the money at lunchtime. I was 10, my brother was 13, and the oldest person working there was 14. And we really did run the Tasty Treat. Of course, it was just hamburgers and hot dogs and milkshakes at the time. I had a friend I was telling her this, and she said, "Well, that's terrible. Don't you think that was child abuse?"
Yeah, exactly.
It was great. We loved it. We loved contributing. Then later when my dad was there more often, he had a little business called Whirly Candy Company. And then when he shut that down, then he was there at the restaurant. And so was mother. And that's when she started adding the meals to it, you know.
So I grew up from the time I was 6 eating in our family restaurant, our family cafe, every day during the summertime. That's what we did. And we would get the meat and 3 vegetables, like Edwin was talking about. And it was $1. For $1, you got meat, 3 vegetables, and dessert. And I remember it was a penny tax. So when you paid, you had to pay $1 and a penny, you know. And so I ate really good quality vegetables from the time I was 6 years old in the restaurant. I don't ever remember eating collard greens until I was an adult.
See, and you want to give your grandchild a hard time. He's got plenty of time.
Yeah.
He can eat a vegetable later.
But I loved all the vegetables I was given. It's just that when I had a choice, I probably picked green beans over collards and corn, you know, corn over
mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
But anyway, so then, you know, I grew up there. Then we closed that cafe and we would start going to my grandmother's steps house. We call her Mama Step. Every day, not every day, but a lot of days, we'd go there for lunch and she would cook for us still. And then after that, Midge would cook for us after Mama Step was not able to. So these Southern vegetables, even though our mother didn't really cook that way so much, I was exposed to them, and Edwin and Teresa were as well. But I don't really recall ever liking collard greens until I was an adult.
That lunch at Mama Step's house every day, and I mostly remember Midge, because I think by the time I was old enough, probably Midge was doing most of the cooking. That's our aunt, Midge. It wasn't just family that would show up. There were people from all over the whole community. Farmers would come. Mm-hmm. I remember being down there, and there must have been 100 people one day that was in there. So I don't remember enough about that tradition. Probably Teresa and Colette and Rick can tell more, but I wanted to explore that today, how her, you know, before the restaurant, I think the restaurant came about because she was doing that years ago, just that with the kitchen, her kitchen was always open to anybody who wanted to show up. Am I right? Tell us about that.
You're probably right about that. And I remember Dad saying that she would look up if there were grave diggers in the graveyard, because of course, across from the store was the church and graveyard. And then their house was way down in behind that. If she saw people digging a grave, she would put on extra food because she knew they were going to be coming to her house to eat. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just kind of the way it may have evolved, but I can't say for sure. Colette, do you know?
I don't know. And I had not heard that story. But that's great. And it sounds so much like that, the family and that time period, you know?
Yeah. And I can remember Dad saying they used to laugh because people would come in the store and say to Daddy Step, whose grave are they digging? And he would tell them, and they would go, "Oh, did he die?" And they thought that was so funny.
Trying to get ahead on the schedule. I don't know what I might need to have to do.
That's funny.
I love the story about your mother having to cook when she was so young because everyone was sick. Maybe you could tell that story.
She was about 12 and all the rest of the kids had measles, the youngest, and Mama Steph had to hold the baby almost all the time. I guess that would have been Jean would have been so sick at that time. And Mabel and Midge probably helped, were already helping out at the store. But Daddy Step said, well, Sunday was coming up. And he said, they always had fried chicken. He said, who's going to fix that fried chicken for us today? Who's going to fix lunch? And my mother used to tell this story. I wish you had met her, Cynthia, because she could really tell it. And she said, oh, I do. I will. I know exactly how to do it. I've watched Mama do it, and I know what to do. So she had promised him that she was going to do that. So she had to go out and get the chicken and put the chicken on the stump.
And wring his neck.
Well, she said she couldn't do that. She was going to chop its head off. And I don't know how she got the chicken to be still enough that she could chop the head off. But she said right before she was going to deliver that last axe blow, the chicken looked up at her and went, and just like, please, please don't do this to me. And I couldn't imagine that she really did that. And I said, how did you do it? And she said, well, I had to. I told Daddy that I would. And so she had to and singe the feathers off of it and the whole nine yards. I don't know if you've ever smelled singeing feathers or not, but the family said that Daddy Step said the chicken was good, but she couldn't eat chicken for a number of years.
If people had to do that to eat chicken, there would be a lot less chicken eating.
Yeah.
Chicken eating.
It's incredible when you think about, you know, where we are now with everybody doing everything for us.
Right.
Including growing our fruits and vegetables for us instead of mm-hmm. growing them ourselves.
You and I would be real hungry.
You would be vegetarians probably.
I don't know, we couldn't grow it, so we'd be like, shit, what the hell do we do?
I would actually do it if I had to, but
you stepped on that damn plant and now it's dead. Get off.
What is your typical New Year's Day meal?
A pork roast and collard greens, black-eyed peas, and mashed potatoes.
Oh, cool. I would never have guessed the pork roast. So. Yeah.
How about you? What do you have that's different, or do you have the same vegetables?
Several times I've done the collard greens and the black-eyed peas just because all of my daughter-in-laws are from Minnesota, Wisconsin, and they have no clue about anything like that. And I've just done it for fun because our mother used to make a meal like that. And Teresa, you could probably tell us more. What did Mom usually make for New Year's?
She usually did pork chops, let me see, black-eyed peas, and sauerkraut.
Okay. Which that's more of a German thing, you know, the sauerkraut. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Edwin, do you have any that you do?
Whatever works best for a hangover is what I eat.
How about you, Cynthia?
You know,
do you have a New Year's meal?
I don't. And my mom would always want the black-eyed peas. And, oh, I cannot eat those things. They taste like cigarette smoke to me.
Come on, Cynthia, now. Don't discourage our listeners from trying those delicious, nutritious black-eyed peas on New Year's Day. Well, thank you very much, Colette, for joining us today. Such a pleasure to have you with us, hear your lovely voice, and get your delicious recipe for collard greens. So, Produce Buzzers podcast fans, it's time for your favorite segment on Produce Buzzers podcast. Yes, I know it's not your favorite, but you got to endure it because we have to do a home grown. Teresa, what is our pun of the day?
Why did the collard greens taste like shoe leather?
Why did the collard greens taste like shoe leather? Because Rick didn't cook them properly and he washed them in his washing machine with his dirty underwear. That's
And then he chewed it into shoe leather.
And then he put it in the microwave. Put too much water in.
Oh, no.
Okay, why did the collard greens taste like shoe leather?
They're soul food. Okay.
So that's all we have time for today, Produce Buzzers. Thank you all for your work to present more about fresh fruits and vegetables. And special thank you to Colette Worley for joining us with her recipe for collard greens. We hope we can have her back with some of her other delicious recipes in future podcasts. We thank our listeners for joining us. Thank you so much. We hope we inspired you to eat more fresh fruits and veggies, and especially collard greens today. Good night. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the Produce Buzzers podcast, brought to you by Produce Buzz, a gathering place for lovers of fresh fruits and veggies. We hope you were entertained a bit and educated a lot about fresh produce. Be sure to join us next time, and please tell your friends to do so as well. Like, share, and comment on our Produce Buzz Facebook page. And check out our website at www.producebuzz.com. There you will find articles about fresh fruits and veggies, how to select, store, and prepare them, as well as lots of interesting facts about all the wonderful bounty the earth provides for us. Until next time, be fruitful, and don't forget to veg out.